This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Bridge staff writer Nancy Derringer tells us about the initial promising results of an effort to improve reading in some West Michigan school districts, including those in Allegan and Barry counties. But first, construction on a key section of the Dakota Access Pipeline has been halted for now. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers denied a permit that would have allowed for construction just north of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. The proposed path of the pipeline brought protesters to North Dakota from around the country. We're going to talk to one woman who made the journey from Kalamazoo. Monica Washington Padula was part of the protest at Standing Rock in November. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Bonjour.
What made you decide that you wanted to go and be part of this protest?
Well, I think, like many of us, I was in a big state of disbelief viewing the videos on social media of the attacks on the water protectors, and really felt helpless. Like, there was nothing I could do. Yeah, we could send money. We could send messages of encouragement and support to those there. But it was one of those just deep-seated convictions that made me really wonder, well, is there more that I could do? And I really felt that it was something that I could put forth more effort towards, especially being an Indigenous woman. I definitely felt that responsibility to take up action when I heard the call for help.
Did you have any concerns yourself about personal safety when you went there?
Absolutely. For me personally, I purposefully took a couple of months to gauge the situation. Is it going to get better? Someone's going to step in. Somebody from the administration is going to step in. This isn't going to get far. Somebody's going to make sure that these protectors see justice from what they're experiencing and what we're watching them experience. But I had to face the reality that it really was not getting better. And so by the time I had my trip planned, which I planned it a month in advance, I was along the way hoping that things would get better and that I wouldn't have to take that trip. But once I saw that they were not and it was getting worse, then I knew that it really wasn't an option. The biggest fears was that in my communications with people who had both been there, who were currently keeping an eye on the situation, and basically what was floating around the media, I was mostly concerned about being stopped by the police. There were stories of people being stopped and having their items confiscated, having them desecrated, and that there was an overall attempt to prevent people from being able to take needed supplies to the camp, and our caravan was taking some supplies for donation. So that was my biggest concern, was facing that before I even made it into the camp. Luckily, we did go an alternate route where we were able to evade that, and we were able to get there safely with no problems. And so I think that we were pretty fortunate in that.
And let's remind people, when exactly did you go? What dates are we talking about?
I arrived on the 23rd, and I stayed until that, which was a Tuesday, and I stayed through Thanksgiving until that Saturday evening, which I believe was the 26th.
So can you give us a synopsis of what you saw over those several days when you were in North Dakota?
Absolutely. Because of the nature of the trip, I really did not know what to expect. And I think that that was true for a lot of people, especially like my travel partners who were going with me. We really didn't know what to expect. We were keeping up with what was going on social media and just trying to be as prepared as possible. But that was a little difficult just because things could change from day to day. So reports of what protectors had experienced the night before could have changed. And so we were just really, I think, trying to put ourselves in a space where we would be prepared for whatever. And overall, just getting there in and of itself was a big act of accomplishment for us. Once we got there and we pulled up alongside the side of the camp to get to the entrance, I remember seeing all of the signs, and the signs were kind of what made it real for me. Like, these people, they've been camped out here, they've made signs, and just reading through those, it really made it real. It's like, this is where it's happening, this is where this movement is happening, and this resistance is happening, and I'm privileged to be able to be here and to be able to join in solidarity with my Indigenous relatives and also those who have come who are non-Native to support. Again, that whole not knowing what to expect once I was inside of the camp, you know, was kind of quickly settled after maybe a day or so there. However, again, anything could change at any moment. And so just always having that apprehension in the back of your mind that this could not be like this tomorrow or later tonight. And just, I was prepared to go with the flow. Whatever needed to be done, wherever I was needed, was kind of what my goal was, what my agenda was. And for me, it was even deeper than going to stand up against the injustice of this one isolated incident of this pipeline being put within 10 minutes of the reservation. It was also a way for me to be able to be in a space that was Indigenous-led and that was populated with so many tribal nations coming together in a way that hasn't been done since the 70s. And to be able to be in that space and be around a community and culture that I frankly did not have the privilege of growing up with and growing up around, it was even more of a type of a spiritual need for me. And so to be able to combine the need that the tribe had with almost a need that I also had to be immersed in that type of space, it served that for me. One thing that I want to share is that when we first arrived, everyone was asked to attend an orientation to get an idea of what the camp was like and what the goal and mission was. And the two main ideas that I walked away with that really stuck with me was, first of all, the camp was not a festival. It was not a party. It was not a reunion. It was not a celebratory type of atmosphere.
Very serious?
It was more, it's sacred. Mm. So it was a place where we were coming to be in prayer and ceremony, and to take away kind of the fun aspect that people might have, like kind of the novelty aspect. We're going to do something new. We're resisting. That kind of got put into check when we got there. And we were reminded, this is serious. This is not a joke. This is not a drill. Every single day that you're here, you're participating actively in resistance, and we need to remember that we have to stay in prayer. This needs to be a prayerful space. And I also just really, really appreciated that being said, and it helped to remind me to try to approach any of the activities that I was involved in that way, with that sense of sincere respect and honor.
You mentioned that idea of being with other Indigenous people. And I guess one thing I wonder is, does this issue maybe move across tribal lines in a way that is different than maybe past experiences that you've had?
Absolutely. There are a few articles out there that I've read that mentioned that this incident specifically united tribes in a way that they haven't been united in a long time, whether because of just past historical conflict within, you know, each nation. Again, going back to what I said before, is that many of us felt really convicted inherently. And I think that's tied to being who we are as Native people, is that when we see a group that's having an issue and having a problem and they need our help, we need to be there. And I think that was felt really, really strongly in the situation. And so it did bring together different tribes that formerly may not have been associated together or worked together in a really long time. And I think that that's an amazing form of healing for what our nations have been through here in America. And so I really found that to be one of the, I would say, the positive aspects of this very serious issue, is that on this hand, it brought us together, and it caused us to have to stand together with one mission, one purpose, one intent, and on the same agenda. And I think that that was extremely powerful.
You are someone who's been involved in other issues specifically related to mascots, schools using Native
Absolutely.
American mascots for sporting events, for their sports teams. Do you see a connection between these two issues? And I guess if so, what would that connection be?
Absolutely. I need to share that as Indigenous people, based on the history of America and how it was founded and where the land came from, and even more specifically in this issue with DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline, the fact that it is on unceded Sioux land is really important, because it kind of it brings to light this conflict over what's whose and who has the rights to what. And I think it's really important to always remember, first and foremost, that we owe a lot of what we have to the people that were here before and set it up for us. So with that being said, at the same time, historically, there were many things set into place that prevented Native and Indigenous people from having access to equal rights. And even now, we're still struggling for those, and Native mascots are one key way that we are not on the table with other, even minority status races, as far as our race, culture, and spirituality being used as a mascot and as a show, accompanied with all kinds of antics that are very, very disrespectful and taken out of context of what they mean to us for sporting and athletic events. So the reason that they're tied hand in hand is because just like this pipeline is being put in the ground next to a reservation and basically letting these people know that this water is we want to protect it for ourselves, but, you know, we're really not as concerned. If it's protected for you, you'll figure it out, you'll deal with it. And then the same thing transferring over to mascots. This is something that we want for ourselves. We want to take on this persona and this pseudo identity. And, you know, even though, yeah, it originally came from you, you kind of just need to deal with what we want to do with it. And you'll figure it out.
So the victory, such as it is at Standing Rock, may be temporary. There's going to be a new administration coming in. This can get reviewed again. Do you view this as something that you would be willing to go back and protest again to stand up for what you believe on this?
Absolutely. The very difficult thing is watching members of this tribe and their supporters basically be brutalized by the police. I think that was the hardest thing to witness and to watch. And if that type of violence is something that's going to continue and it's going to keep, you know, mounting and growing, I absolutely feel that we need to, again, step up our direct action and our physical presence there. Of course, we all hope for the best, but given our history with the United States and with broken promises, we have to stay on edge and we have to stay alert and looking out. Would I personally go back? I would. It would be difficult, you know, given our everyday life, but then remembering that this is a strong need and this is something that that is very meaningful to fight for. A lot of people like myself, we just have to make it work.
Monica Padula, Washington, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
You can find links with more coverage of the protests at Standing Rock and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' decision to deny a permit for a key section of the Dakota Access Pipeline at WMUK.org.